Unity is strength and assured success. All for one and one for all. Unity means solidarity. Yeah. United we stand, divided we fall.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. I was talking to a, and I won't mention their name or anything. Okay, David. From a government agency yesterday, and he told me that the government is cutting back on people being self-employed. You know? And I was like, wow, isn't that interesting? It's not like I didn't know that already, but it's... Don't you hate it when your suspicions are proven true, whether you like them or not? That's what living in New Zealand is kind of like. You imagine a dark hand everywhere, in every government pocket or in everybody's mind. And inevitably, you find out that there is, in some way, shape, or form. Unfortunately, though, makes it difficult to kind of classify everything. And what everybody wants to hear is like, oh, how do you deal with those situations? Well, even if I told you how to deal with those situations, you'd only hear it the once. Unless you download the archives and repeat it. You know, then you might get the idea. But the difficulty is, when you're learning anything, like particularly Freeman arguments, when you're supposed to be able to talk to police and judges and such, as if you're a sovereign human being who can't be ordered around, you can't just wander moseying on in. There is an awful lot of research and indeed practice, I believe, that needs to be gone through in order to argue successfully in court that they don't have any jurisdiction over you. Right? Kind of like that. That's sort of what it's like being in New Zealand. Knowing that these people don't have any power over you, they work for the government, but being unable to defend yourself anyway, because they bring down such brutal force on you. You know, taxation, I think, is, I don't know. It's one of those classic things that you often hear people bicker and argue about. Oh, the taxes are too high. Oh, the taxes are too low. Oh, we need more taxes for this, more taxes for that. But they never actually question the base premise of why the F are we being taxed at all? And where's the rule that says we have to be? There isn't one. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you by GuerrillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. We'll be right back after the break.
Tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, It's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business. It's business time.
Baby. Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Oh.
We go brush our teeth. That's all part.
I like the way that you give me that information straight off your webpage. I like it how you dress it up and give me a spooky headline to freak me out. Mainstream media, it's business time. Speaking of mainstream media, one thing that's interesting is the level of enormous and completely justified petrifying fear of the Japanese nuclear disaster. Japan's nuclear rescuers, inevitable, some of them may die within weeks. The next article is, up to 1,000 bodies left untouched near troubled nuke plant. The next one is, exclusive, wanted, US workers for crippled Japan nuke plant. the endless slaughter. Workers at the disaster-stricken Fukushima nuclear plant in Japan say they expect to die from radiation sickness as a result of their efforts to bring the reactors under control. The mother of one of the men tells Fox News. And they have about 5 hours of exposure. That's like the maximum for a lifetime, apparently. This is the most dangerous situation that you could ever conceivably be in. I sure hope they're getting enormous amounts of hazard pay that will go directly to their families. You know, this is not a joke. You know, we're talking about millions of people that basically are about to die. Yep. Probably the worst disaster humanity has ever seen. Yeah. The so-called Fukushima 50, the team of brave plant workers struggling to prevent a meltdown to four reactors critically damaged by the March 11th earthquake and tsunami, are being repeatedly exposed to dangerously high radioactive levels as they attempt to bring vital cooling systems back online. Speaking tearfully through an interpreter by phone, the mother of a 32-year-old worker said, "My son and his colleagues have discussed it at length, and they have committed themselves to die if necessary to save the nation." Hey, well, that is so noble. You know, that's precisely what you do in a situation where everybody's going to die. Sacrifice yourself to save them all. Okay? But you can't tell other people, hey, you have to sacrifice yourself to save us all. You know, you have to be the one who can volunteer. And these men are real men. They did it. He told me they've accepted they will all probably die from radiation sickness in the short term or cancer in the long term. The woman spoke to Fox News on the condition of anonymity because she said plant workers had been asked by management not to communicate with the media or share details with family members in order to minimize public panic. Now, I see a kind of moral dilemma here. And it's an interesting one too. Conundrum, if you will. If you have information that means the end of life as we know it for an entire society, for example, the Japanese society, and let's not pick any bones about it, this is the end of Japan as we know it. Do you tell people that? Or do you just try to minimize the panic? Because if you tell people that, everybody will freak out and riot in the streets and it'll be anarchy, right? Or maybe it won't. Maybe everybody will just suddenly pull together and the global community will help evacuate all the people out of the dead zone and commit to a concerted effort to plug this monster forever with as much concrete as money could buy. Because money is no object at this point. It's already done. Irrecoverable damage to everywhere that it's touched pretty much. There's radiation all over the Northern Hemisphere. And you know, There's only three words to say to that. God bless New Zealand. But we won't be able to even fish in the Pacific no more. Mm-hmm. Or at least that's what a scientific advisor to the BBC said on Truth Frequency with Chris and Cherie. And I'm kind of inclined to agree with them. The potential of contamination, radioactive contamination of your food supply is no small issue. Any radioactive particle that comes into contact with something else, that something else becomes radioactive too. And takes just as long to stop becoming radioactive, which is like, what, feasibly, in the short term at least, forever? Yeah. Well, he's advised not to eat anything out of the Pacific Ocean for 6 months to a year. Now, up to 1,000 bodies have been left untouched near the troubled nuclear plant. Radiation fears have prevented authorities from collecting these bodies and victims of the March 11th earthquake and tsunami from within the 20-kilometre radius evacuation zone around the stricken plant. Police sources said this on Thursday. One of the sources said bodies had been exposed to high levels of radiation after death. And the view was supported by the detection Sunday of elevated levels of radiation on a body found in Okuma, Fukushima Prefecture, about 5 kilometres from the nuclear power station. The authorities are now considering how to collect bodies, given fears that police officers, doctors and bereaved families may be exposed to radiation and retrieving the radiation-exposed bodies or at the morgues, according to the sources. So you've got the idea of actually trying to recover people who are now dangerous after they're dead because of radiation. All right? That's the reason why the radiation's such a dangerous thing, man, because it just screws up everything. You know, it just strikes without mercy with the inevitable consequences. Well, local residents have been forced to leave the zone, obviously, since the current crisis began. Now, it's the old Tokyo Electric Power Company plant, which is leaking radioactive materials as its cooling systems for its reactors and nuclear spent fuel pools, have been knocked out by the disaster. And even after the bodies are handed over to victims' families, cremating them could spread plumes containing radioactive materials, while burying the victims could contaminate the soil around them, according to the sources. What do you do with radioactive stuff? There's nothing safe about it. You know, and I walk into, a friend of mine was telling me that he was in a science lab and there's just little beep, beep, beep. And he was like, what is that? Yeah. In the lab for about 15 minutes or so. And asked the guy next to him, what is that beeping sound? And he says, oh, that's the radiation alarm. And he's like, that's been going for like ages, bro, and we've been sitting in here. He's like, yeah, look over there. And he looks over there, and there's just this rock of uranium or something. Just sitting there. Yeah, people really, I don't think that the practice of safety around radioactive materials is quite up to scratch. You know, I mean, least of all the times that we were all just walking around with your average radiation belt on, the cell phones and computers and every other type of electrical equipment pumping out EMF radiation at you. Everybody thinks radiation's just dandy. It's just so freaking fabulous. I can't believe it. Why, under any circumstances, would you want to bring this down on anybody's country? And that's a question that actually needs to be asked more. Why would you do it? Well, worldwide panic, huge amounts of death, enormous crisis can be used as a pretext for virtually any type of emergency draft legislation that you want. I thought up, in fact, just thinking now, just some random thing that I could justify if a radiation cloud was heading over my to disclose it to the public instead of keeping it secret and then going to the basketball like Barack H.O. Barry has. I could just say it's martial law and there's a curfew. Everybody has to stay indoors to prevent themselves from being contaminated from radiation. Hey, that's perfect justification for it right there, don't you think? And meanwhile, while everybody's focused on how incredibly afraid they are of all this radiation pumping down upon them, they'll think about nothing else, which would be quite convenient for any people trying to loot the economy or start foreign wars. Hey, Barack H.O. Barry's just invaded another country. Oh, well, you know, it's only a small invasion. If George Bush had done this, then everybody would be out in force. There would be marches of hundreds of thousands of people in every city across the globe, practically, against this kind of incursion. But because it's Barack H.O. Barry, it's all good. If it's NATO, it must be loving, it must be caring. You know, NATO didn't do any damage to the people of Bosnia. Yeah, whenever you get involved with the, I don't know, if you get involved with weapons at all, basically, you wind up killing people, and the bigger and the more expensive the weapons are, the more people you kill, you know. It seems to be about the thing of it. You know, US spending more than anybody else and is the largest freaking military in the world, capable of destroying the entire world all at once, if they chose to. But interestingly enough, finds it difficult fighting wars on multiple fronts, and they seem to have bases on virtually every country on the planet, which is going to be the leader of the world's army. And when you say world's army, you got to think about an actual global government with a world army. Okay? Imagine that. You try to stage an uprising and you don't want to be a slave to a criminal banking syndicate that rules the whole planet. You have to deal with the world army. And US is basically the model for that. You know? It's basically everywhere. It's extremely mobile. Can get into position. And, yeah, that's your alternative. Most people will not even bother trying to fight a monster of such size. And everybody goes out of their way to avoid US coming into them. Nobody wanted them. The only people who ever wanted the US forces to go into anywhere are the people who profit off of the buying of weapons, which comes out of the taxes that people pay, right? All you got to do is just be the person who loans all the money to the government, and then no matter what craziness the government does, they will become even greatly indebted to you. And so, in essence, you own the country, you know, because everybody's private property has been leveraged by the government to get loans. Okay? You have any idea what happens to people when they leverage everything that they own to get loans? To just pay bills? They wind up completely in the hole and go bankrupt and get foreclosed on. And that's the plan all along. It's precisely what's happening in Libya, to my thinking. You know, Gaddafi said, we've got a nationally owned oil company and all the profits stay here in Libya. And we have 2% share of the world's oil supply. Great. Uh-oh. There's some jet planes and some people kind of uprising and such. And now all of a sudden the rebels have set up their own private bank, central bank, of course, in the same model as every other corrupt country in the world, most of them Western, and their own oil company as well, the rebels, who can't even hold a battlefront for more than 30 seconds and shoot at everybody randomly on the freaking highway. They're completely disorganized and out of control. They're retarded. You know, these people can't run a country. These people couldn't shoot an elephant. They're pathetic. What the heck is going on here? Just these rudimentary, fundamentalist hacks who have clueless opportunity of doing anything, being supported by one of the largest military organizations, NATO, in the known world, who are bombing everything out of Gaddafi, and Gaddafi's forces still advance. You know why? Because the rebels couldn't hold a stick upright, let alone hold an entire town. This is not a war to be concerned about turning into a major conflict, all right? If the NATO stayed out of it, the rebels, and of course, if the CIA stopped helping the rebels, and of course the 1,000-plus troop trainers that they landed as well earlier on in the peace, if they would stop there as well, these rebels would be annihilated and gone momentarily. Because they're just that stupid. And the only reason why the international community is putting up these no-fly zones is because the international media lied about Gaddafi's jets strafing crowds. Never happened. That came out a couple of days ago. So again, we have a false flag event, kind of like Gulf of Tonkin, an incident that never happened, was used to justify sending in copious amounts of troops. It's the same freaking tricks over and over again. When are we going to wake up? Come on, people. Get it together. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Join us in the chat room there and check out our fabulous archives. And we'll be right back after the break at GorillaMedia.co.nz. Back in a moment. And welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Here we go. Welcome to the show, Servando. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Finally, we got the connection. Something happened last time. So, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, my party line is I'm borderlining on fabulous, so that's how I'll be voting this election.
And then, how are you getting my signal there? Okay?
Oh, it's coming through just fine. I'd love it if you could explain to the audience just a little bit about yourself and the little book you wrote.
Like all books, and I have written several books in English and in Spanish, but like all books, it's a long story. This is more than 20 years research. But I began writing this book about 2.5 years ago, and was going to be a book about the CIA. And even I had a title for the book. Kiss Your CIA Goodbye, Why the Agency is Fading into Oblivion. That was the initial title of the book. And then, but then half through it, I realized that even though the CIA was a very important, had many ramifications and was a lot more wider in scope than just the CIA. And then eventually I changed the title to the one that now the book has been published, that is Psychological Warfare and the New World Order, the Secret War against the American people. Now, you are in New Zealand, and this is a important because I read in your site that you think that something, the New World Order is also affecting New Zealand, and that's what we call the New World Order. It's a global thing. And then actually the book is a secret war against the peoples of the world. It's even wider in scope. And that is what the book is all about. It's about this psychological warfare. Because we have been for many years, under attack. We have been at war. But at least not yet, it's not a war with tanks, planes, carriers and that kind of thing, but it's a war in the people's mind. It's a psychological war, and what the book is all about.
Well, the aspect of a psychological war, according to the Pentagon, approximately 90% of war is information control.
Sun Tzu, this Chinese general who wrote 300 years B.C., he said that all warfare is based on deception. And his book, The Art of War, is...
His book, The Art of
still
War...
...still considered intelligence and espionage. And in his book... His book is a, and then he mentioned that the best war is the one that you don't have even to shoot, that you destroy the enemy before shooting, because you destroy the intention,
the will.
The war is in the mind of the enemy, and that is the theory.
Well, and
these people have.
I suppose that if you keep everybody incredibly fearful of loss and things of that nature, and then they're not able to go out and they're not willing to risk what it is they've become or who they are as a person in order to obtain anything like freedom or sovereignty or personal wealth, things like that, then you could basically have a nice subdued population who would basically just accept whatever proposals, no matter how ridiculous, that you propose.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. And it's interesting several years ago, even myself, I thought, well, what is coming? The New World Order is the society that envisioned George Orwell in his novel 1984. But I was wrong. I was wrong because not in 1984, it's a totalitarian society where people are controlled, and they have, by law, they have to have in every room a TV screen that is two-way, and people are totally under the control of this totalitarian society, the master of the totalitarian society, through the this TV screen. But no, Orwell was wrong. What we are having now is closer to Huxley's, what's the name of his book? A Brave New World, where even Orwell never imagined that people were going to go to the internet and post all their private information there without any force from the government, because they are totally brainwashed. And this is the picture that Huxley, although Huxley painted in his novel, A Brave New World. And this is what seems to be the world of the future. Now, I am a sort of first-class specialist in the New World Order. Do you know why?
Enlighten me.
Vinny?
Enlighten me.
Well, because I live under the New World Order for more like, I would say, 15 years. You know, I'm Cuban. And I escaped from Cuba in 1981 with my family. We managed to escape. I ended up in Switzerland, where I lived for about a year before coming to the United States. And after researching and looking at my experience in Cuba, I reached the conclusion that Castro's Cuba is a successful testing ground for the New World Order, a very successful experiment, and has worked at perfection. Before Castro took power in Cuba in 1959, Cuba was a very advanced society, not what is painted in many books of pro-Castro writers and pro-Castro fans. Cuba was the society in the world most closer to the American society, to the fact that some advertising and companies in the United States, these Madison Avenue companies, use Cuba as a testing ground to test American products. And I remember this product that's still people using, this cleaner that people use in the kitchen, Ajax, we had in Cuba for, I would say, 6 months before they launched the product in the United States. When Castro took power in Cuba in 1959, he found a system, a communication by microwave that for the whole island that was unique in the world. Not even in the United States this system of communication existed, because the companies were testing the product in Cuba. And the same with this huge factory in the eastern part of Cuba, in Oriente, this nickel production factory, and then that was unique in the world, and many things. And you know that Cuba, in 1959, when Castro took power, in Havana alone, there were about six TV stations, and the first color TV station in the world outside the United States was in Havana. So we have a very advanced society. And then
it's prototype testing grounds, essentially. And the British Empire used New Zealand the British Empire wanted to think about, you know, women's suffrage and giving women the vote, they tested it on New Zealand. And incidentally, all the women just voted the same way as their husbands, so there was no real difference in the control of society. So they did it in Britain too later.
Yeah. They used the correct. But the thing is that and this is an important part in my book, because there are many things about New World Order. When you read my book, you say, well, this is I've been a bit, but I'm breaking new grounds in the sense that I am elaborated in my work. I've been working this many years, that Castro, contrary to his claims, he has always a tool of the people who try to implement the New World Order. More specifically, the Rockefellers. in 1948, early 1948. Castro was recruited now. I have even the information in my side. There is an interview in Spanish of a Cuban who was working for the CIA, and he was an eyewitness and how Castro was recruited by the CIA. He was just a University of Havana student, a law student, and he was 21 years old. But he was a gangster. He already had killed at least two people. And then the embassy in the United States, the American embassy in Havana, the United States embassy in Havana, noticed him. I've seen the documents, and they have been posted in the internet. And then they recruited Castro in the house of Mario Lasso. Mario Lasso was a Cuban, American-educated Cuban lawyer who took all the business, most of the business of the United States of Americans in Cuba. And there were many important people there, people that belonged to the OSS, Office of Strategic Services, the one before the CIA, people of the new CIA, and very important people. And then they recruited Castro and sent him to Colombia, to Bogota, Colombia, as an agent provocateur. And everybody knows that any book about the CIA, you can find that in 1953, the CIA overthrew a Premier Mossadegh in Iran. In 1954, they overthrew President Jacobo Arbenz in Guatemala. But most books about the CIA ignore or barely mention that the first psychological operation of this type was took place in Colombia, Bogota. Began April 9, 1948, with the assassination of Jorge Eliezer Gaitán, that was a nationalist leader, and his assassination erupted, caused a riots that destroyed the central part of the city, and these riots are called the Bogotazo riots that happened in Colombia in 1948. But it was not a coincidence that at the time that the assassination of Gaitán and the riot, U.S. Secretary of State, George Marshall, was in Bogota in the in an international conference of Latin American states for the creation of what is now known as the Organization of American States. And immediately,
we'll be right back after the break. My very special guest will be with us too. We'll be right back after this very, very short little break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Join us in the chat room there in a moment. We'll be right back.
Look at me, driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure, my car is
back.
Global, my power is pure, I can hand out a million vaccinations.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly broadcasting live on 26 AM FM stations worldwide. And one station in particular that I want to give a shout out to on this particular day is Rush 89 FM in Hamilton, who have tirelessly been working to try and run a radio station down in the Tron, the city of the future, the city of Agenda 21. And unfortunately, they are being shut down tomorrow. And there will be no more Vinnie Eastwood Show being broadcast in that particular area. As yet, there are many schemes in the works to both resist being shut down and to start anew if necessary. My heart goes out to them. I'd like to thank them very much for this entire time that they've been playing my show. Back to this episode, however, my very special guest, Servando Gonzalez, joins me now. And he's a man of a little bit of humor, like myself, and he's the author of a book called Psychological Warfare and the New World Order, and he's a Cuban expatriate. So if anybody knows about warfare and psychology, it's somebody who managed to escape Cuba in the Scarface sense of the word. And no, he didn't move into Florida and become a cocaine dealer afterwards. Servando, welcome back.
Yeah, I was telling about the CIA activities in Iran, where they overthrew Mossadegh and a year later in 1954. They overthrew Jacob Arbenz in Guatemala. But I was mentioning the Bogota, so this event, these riots that took power, took place in Bogota, Colombia. And your Secretary of State, George Marshall, U.S. Secretary of State George Marshall was there, not by coincidence, and then immediately he blamed the communists. And the Rockefellers, through the CIA, we can talk about that later, recruited Castro and sent him there as an agent provocateur, and then putting false clues. And then they blame the communists. And it's interesting because the Bogotazo marked the onset, the beginning of the Cold War in the Western Hemisphere. The Colombians have always seen the Bogotazo as an event of their internal politics. No, not at all. This is was something planned, carried out by the CIA, and was... And the true object, it was something against the American people, not even the Colombians, because it was to begin with the fear of communism. Why? Because the previous enemy, the Nazi German, had been just defeated, and they knew they needed a new enemy, and the new enemy was going to be now communism and the Soviet Union, and the beginning of the fear was the Bogota riots. Most of the delegates of there were Secretary of States of different Latin American countries that were in this. It's called the Ninth International Conference of International State. George Marshall was presiding. They were reluctant to sign before the riots. They were reluctant to sign a document creating the Organization of American States and condemning communism. But after the riots, everybody got scared and then signed the creation of the Organization of American States and a declaration condemning international communism. Now, it's interesting because the Bogotá was the first psychological warfare of the Hegelian type thesis, antithesis, synthesis carried out by the CIA, where the antithesis took the form of a false flag operation. And then all the elements that we saw later in similar operations were present in the Bogotá, so the use of an agent provocateur, Fidel Castro, the use of Patsy's, the guy who killed Guy Tan, and then all the elements. And it's interesting because in my book, the longest chapter in my book, Psychological Warfare and the New World Order, is a chapter about the Bogotazo. And I don't call the chapter Bogotazo, but I call the beginning of the Cold War. That is what is really about the Bogotazo. Now, it's interesting because at the end of my book, I make an analysis, a comparison from the point of view of intelligence and espionage, from an analysis and a comparison between the Bogotazo and September 11, 2001. And all the elements present in the Bogotazo were present also in the 9/11 operation that was also a psychological warfare operation of a Hegelian type, thesis, antithesis, synthesis, and 9/11 was the antithesis in the form of a false flag operation carried out by the CIA and other elements in the United States government. And even that is amazing. Fidel Castro acted as an agent provocateur in the Bogotazo and also as an agent provocateur in 9/11. It's not well known that about 6 months before the 9/11 events, Castro began inviting Muslim leaders, anti-American Muslim leaders in the world, to Havana. And about 3 months.
Well, I think that that's really strange, isn't it? And I really like the idea that intelligence agents and terrorists and government officials are all so nice and cozy these days, sitting around having a brandy and a cigar whilst they hatch their devilish schemes to corrupt the population's sense of security so that they'll accept any tyranny that gets offered up to give them a little bit of public order. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Servando Gonzalez from servandogonzalez.com. And we'll be right back after this very short break.
Yeah. Servandogonzalez.org.
There we are. .org. There we go. We'll be right back, folks. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. I'd like to thank everybody who's been helping out to keep this show running and also Guerrilla Media, everybody who's been watching the videos that I've been doing and helping me out with all the little ways and supporting things that you do. Everybody out there who is doing something, you know who you are and you know that I love you for it. Okay, my very special guest is Servando Gonzalez, and we just have a short segment here, Servando, and I wanted to get your take on just the ramifications of the recent Japan crisis in relation to our Lord and Savior, Barack H.O. Barry. Servando, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. So what was your question?
I wanted to know about the nuclear power plants as they relate to Barack Obama.
I just wrote an article that I think I sent to a site. I think they already published, but I'm going to put in my site in a few hours. That is about the possibility that this is a not just an accident of nature, but can be something provoked. Now, my point is this: as you know, Obama is a tool. He's a puppet of international bankers and big oil corporations. Now the oil corporations, as William Engdahl in some of his book, he has proved, he's a specialist in oil, that the big problem of the oil big oil companies is not finding more sources of oil, but to call to these guys to avoid new sources of oil, because oil is very abundant in nature, but they have a monopoly. So the less they produce, the more money they make. And particularly now that the two main goals of the New World Order conspirators is first, the population. They want to kill 85% of the current population of the planet, and then deindustrialization. They want to reduce us, the survivors. They want to reduce the survivors to pre-industrial levels of consumption, and most of industrial civilization is based on the consumption of oil. So no oil, no industrial civilization.
Well, and yeah, that's the point. And then, of course, once everybody is down for the count and unable to support themselves, I mean, gasoline and oil have remarkable amounts of energy and manpower that you just can't harness by horse alone. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest is Servando Gonzalez, and we'll be right back after the break.
I live in, so don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tina Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where'd you rather stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV contrabands. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to our planned absurdity. What? Replace our human rights with commercial slavery.
They print a $100 and loan it to you. They charge interest on the loan but don't print the interest. So there'll never be enough money to pay off all the debt. What do you get? Crash and burn. When will my people learn the truth? Come on now, before it's too late. Hey, I've got a new law for you. Let's make charging interest illegal and I'll tear it all. So righteous, the greedy wanna see me fail. So righteous, like Jesus chilling on some nails. Yeah, I'll fight this, die quick, never old.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. Very special guest is Servando Gonzalez. Now, we were talking about the depopulation agenda. Now, to my mind, the whole idea behind depopulation is that they have the machines necessary to replace all the human labor, but more or less they just want the planet just for themselves and with the remainder of humanity used as slaves and have a large enough military to keep them in line forever, conceivably.
That is the idea. That is exactly what happened in Cuba. As I told you before, Cuba was contrary to the theories that developed by the American left. Cuba was not a third world country. It was a very developed country to the point that American marketing and advertising agencies used Cuba, not Mexico, not Argentina, not Brazil, as a testing ground for American products. And then after 20 years, Castro took power. Oh, Cuba, contrary to other countries in Latin America, in Cuba we have rich people, we have poor people, but we had a very wide middle class. You know, upper middle class, lower middle class, and the middle class was expanding. But now, 20 years after he had been 50 years in power, but 20 years, I escaped after 20 years of New World Order in Cuba. I don't call it communism, I escaped. And then at the time I escaped, 1981, Cuba, the middle class had totally disappeared. And we have only the top of the pyramid with the very, very rich, and it's Castro, his relatives, and his the people with him, and then a very wide base of very poor people. And this is the goal of the New World Order: the very rich and the very poor in a totalitarian communist fascist society they call the New World Order. And total control, and now with this old technology that they can use to control the people, and then like new medieval serfs, so the masters on tops and the medieval serfs on the bottom, and that is the New World Order they envision for us. The first step is, again, because they have this obsession with overpopulation, is to kill at least 85% of the population in the planet, and then the reduction to medieval levels of consumption. No, I was talking about the thing in Japan and a new article I wrote, and I was telling that obviously Obama, like most presidents, beginning with Woodrow Wilson, are puppets of these New World Order conspirators, the Wall Street bankers and magnates of all corporations. And
now, well, hold on a second here. When people talk about the New World Order, some people don't actually understand precisely what it is. But basically, as far as I know, it's just the best and the brightest in the world who've been recruited and happen to run most of the world's largest organizations, businesses, community leaders and things of that nature. And they get recruited and paid, and therefore you have global control because you control the leaders of the organizations. You don't have to control the entire organizations, just their leader. And then you've got everybody's attention to accomplish your goals. And that's what Barack Obama is. He's just a puppet for you to focus on that points you in this direction and that direction. Meanwhile, you're being stabbed in the face.
I call the guy Bushama because he's the seamless continuation of George Bush. And you see that they, in the United States, they think that they have two parties. I call the Republican Party, that it's a coin with two sides, the Republican and the Democratic side of the coin, but it's the same coin. And see that the puppets in the White House change, but the policy is the same. So I was talking about the corporation, the old corporations. They don't want competition, and they don't want more oil because they have a monopoly. And then it was very strange that some time ago, Obama said, oh, okay, I'm going to authorize again the opening for prospection and exploitation in the Gulf of Mexico. And less than a month later, it came this strange BP accident. And then he said, oh, well, now we have to reconsider, okay? And about 2 months ago, Obama began talking that he was thinking about authorizing the use of more nuclear energy in the United States, the creation of more nuclear generators and then came this tsunami and earthquake in Japan, and so we need to reconsider because now there is a problem. Now, you know that I'm specializing in intelligence and espionage, and it is said that in the military there is a saying that first times is a happenstance. Second is a coincidence, and third is enemy action. But in the field of intelligence and espionage, the very first is enemy action. So it is very strange that a coincidence that Obama was going to authorize a new exploitation in the Gulf and came this accident, and now he was going to authorize the creation of new nuclear plants in the United States and came this thing in Japan, well, is very strange. And of course, you know, and and your listeners know about all these things, the HAARP technology in Gakona, Alaska, and the Soviets also have their own coal.
Apparently the Soviets have got much better HAARP technology than the U.S. does.
Yeah, they have. They call woodpecker and woodpecker, and most likely the Japanese also, they have this technology. So most likely we are at war and we don't know that, but it's a climatological war. But it is said that HAARP, but as you know, is based on the technology developed by Nikola Tesla, genius Nikola Tesla.
Oh, so hold on. Hold on a second here. Are we talking about the fact that we're at war secretly using secret weapons and stuff like that to fight the war, and everybody else is just basically stuck in the middle of it?
Yeah. It's not unlikely that this is actually happening. Now, let me ask you, Vinny, what is it? Did you really buy this thing happening in the Middle East, all these countries rebelling, these things happening? What about Libya?
Absolutely I buy it, because I know that the CIA also has bought it.
Do you buy the explanation?
Just for some reason, coincidentally, all around the Middle East, suddenly through Facebook and Twitter, have organized these revolts of these dictators that have been around for 30 years, right in the middle of like an election year kind of thing, to create this enormous great crisis and trigger another war, because no US president ever gets voted out while they're declaring another war. So I think it's going to be horrific.
Asking you if you buy the theory that is given the United States government. I don't. You know, there is something
their official
happening.
Story? Because they keep changing their story. What is their official story? I mean, you're asking me if I buy it. I don't know what I'm buying here.
No. But you know, we are. Let me tell you something funny, because I this is something that I can talk about this to a Russian or a Polish or a Czech. And they who live under communism, and they immediately understand. In Cuba, I remember a long time ago, when I was living in Cuba, that it was this economic crisis in the United States. But Cubans didn't believe it. And I knew, because I have the opportunity. I was reading the foreign press, that Cubans have no opportunity to read and listen to foreign stations, radio stations, and Cubans didn't believe. Why? Why? Because the official Cuban newspapers was telling the Cuban people that there was an economic crisis in the United States. And Cubans, by principle, everything they read in the official media, they saw that was a lie. Unfortunately, most Americans still believe in what they see on TV, what they read in the New York Times and the Washington Times and the Miami Herald.
Well, that's the difference between an in-your-face tyranny and a behind-your-back tyranny, right? If you believe it, then you think that you're free, but you're really not. But in the other form of tyranny, where it's really in your face, if you don't believe it, you're clinically insane. Like, seriously, because it's right there. Everybody can see it. But I think, Servando, that we are now approaching a turning point where the tyranny is now coming into view in the United States. People are now seeing it for what it is, or what it has been the whole time.
Yeah, let me tell you something also. I have an article I have written about this. I'm going to publish in a few weeks. And isn't it because in my life in Cuba, I have the opportunity to live under a democracy, then under a dictatorship, and then under a totalitarian dictatorship. Before, the president of Castro overthrew was called Batista. Batista was a colonel in the army, then a general, whatever. But before there was a democratically elected president. His name was, I'm not wrong, Carlos Prioso Carrasco. And he was a lawyer. And, of course, he was a corrupt politician, like all politicians all around the world. Okay? And then came Batista, and he gave a coup d'etat, and we changed from a democracy to a dictatorship. But the thing that in a dictatorship, if you don't get, if you don't cross the people on top, life doesn't change. People went in and out of the country without any problem. Businesses went fine. In fact, there was an economic boom in Cuba like never before during Batista. Of course, some people were killed, like in the United States. If you get against the corruption of the Batista, you get in trouble. But it was almost no difference, no visible perceivable difference. But then came Castro and changed, and we changed from a dictatorship to a totalitarian dictatorship. Wow, that was a big change. Because in a dictatorship, there are things that you... there was a lot of freedom of expression in Cuba during the Batista dictatorship. Okay, some journalists get killed. Some of them were tortured or harassed. That's true. But still, there was a lot of opposition. There was a political satire magazine called Zigzag. With comics, like comic style, and they were criticizing strongly Batista, and the magazine was never prohibited, was freely. Then came Castro, and by the way, the first magazine that Castro banned in Cuba, the first newspaper, was Zigzag. And then came all the censorship, and now there is just two newspapers. And everything is controlled by the state. And in a totalitarian dictatorship, they want to control not only your public life, but your private life, and more than what you do, even what you think. And that's what is called a totalitarian dictatorship. Unfortunately, it seems that it is the way that we are going in the United States and most of the world. And it's the new world order that I call a communo-fascist totalitarian dictatorship. That is the new world order.
That's our future kind of thing, or our projected future that a few people really like the idea of, but personally, nah, not really keen on it. Now, I'm sorry, before I interrupted you, you had a funny story, or was that it? We're all being amalgamated into a communist fascist dictatorship, and we're all going to be exterminated.
Uh-huh.
Was that... the joke. Okay.
Yeah, I call it communist fascist dictatorship because some people... there is a wrong idea that we have that society is like a horizontal line, where in the middle you have democracy, and in the right you have a fascism, and on the left you have communism. But actually, it's not a line; it's like a circle. And then when you make the circle, the two extremes, fascism and communism, get together. Both fascism and communism are extreme forms of socialism, and democracy, and particularly a republic is a form where it's not a socialism, it's not the important, but the individual, the isolated, the single individual, and it's based on laws, not in the power of the masses in the street. And it's interesting because if you read the three main documents in the United States, that is the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution,
we'll have to get into this
and the Bill of Rights.
Sorry to cut you off there. We're just going off to break here. Servando Gonzalez, ladies and gentlemen, is my guest at servandogonzalez.org, and we'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com.
And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz. My very special guest is Servando Gonzalez, the godfather of the psychological programming of the New World Order. And we were discussing over the break just how terrible the New World Order are, and how they don't have a sense of humor about being a pack of evil slime bags. Fernando, welcome back. Servando, sorry.
Well, it's not that bad. If you ask Zbigniew Brzezinski, David Rockefeller, Jimmy Carter, the Bushes, the Clintons, Henry Kissinger, they will tell you that it's wonderful. It's very good for them.
Something strikes me as strange is that when you have a pleasure in the destruction, the disorder, or the pain and the suffering of another human life, right, that's like the height of sadism, right? And in my opinion, it kind of leads to a lot darker places like Satanism, human sacrifice, and like the occult and all of these other things, which the elite are totally involved in all the time. You know, Bohemian Grove's a classic example of that. Supposedly people think it's been discredited. I haven't done the exact research to find out. So if somebody can show me something that completely disproves that Bohemian Grove exists, then I'll be quite happy to see it. But until then, I'm going to assume that the people who are the elite of this nation and the elite of this world are the most criminally insane, Satan-worshipping, child-kidnapping, blood-letting, scum, filth, demons that you've ever heard of in history.
I cannot agree more. In my book, I say that because my book is a book written from the point of view of intelligence and espionage. And in my book, I mention exactly what you say, but I say that I don't discard the possibility because, the important thing about my book is that I mention the conspiracy and I mention who they are. The main point is that America is a country, and that can extend for most countries in the world. America is a country betrayed by its ruling class. And these people that I call the conspirators is a group centered around an institution called the Council on Foreign Relations. And I give the names, I detail the structure of the Council on Foreign Relations, what they are doing, and mention names. And I was telling you, I say, even though I'm not going to get into this occult side of the conspiracy, because that would be out of the scope of my book. But, of course, this is a the bottom line, this is a battle between good and evil. There is this is more complicated than people think. And it's the same with the Nazis. They keep hidden for many years that the Nazis were more than a political organization, were an occult organization. The Nazis were involved in the occult, and even the same name, Holocaust. Why the killing of the Jews is called a Holocaust? People, what is a Holocaust? Holocaust is a Greek war, and was the name the Greek gave for a killing by burning meat to the gods. And that's what's called the Holocaust. So it has to be with the occult, okay? So, and this is the thing. So,
that's one thing that really kind of throws people off, is that they think for a moment that, oh, well, you know, the world couldn't be controlled by elite demon-worshipping occultists or anything like that. That's just crazy. And they're right. They are crazy. It's not saying that we believe in all stuff,
absolutely.
But they
absolutely.
Do. And we're saying that they're absolutely. Completely out of their freaking minds, and they control our lives to a very large extent. Virtually nothing goes on in your life without some kind of design to it, whether it be the products in your home or the television that you hear or see, or everything has been influenced or tapped in some way by these evil, filthy scumbags. And therefore, it's been contaminating society through and through. It's like a radioactive cloud of evil demon worshipping.
but we have our weapons. In an article that I wrote many years ago that I titled "Slavery is a State of Mind," I expose my point of view that we have our weapon. Main weapon is our mind. This is a war in the people's minds until now. Maybe it will change very soon. But until now, it's a war in the people. And then we have our mind. If we become slaves in our minds, everything is lost. So the main thing is know that something is happening and opposing it with our minds. Let me tell you, I stopped reading the mainstream press about 20 years ago, and I stopped watching TV probably 15 years ago. And I'm not a why I did that, because I reached the conclusion that it's better to be non-informed than misinformed. And as you see, I'm not a non-informed person. So the thing is that we need to oppose this barrage of disinformation to brainwash our minds. And at the epilogue of the book, I give some very concrete instructions. So I was telling that what is important in this new book, Psychological Warfare and the New World Order, is that I mentioned the main organization that is behind the imposing of the New World Order organization, but the one in the United States, the Council on Foreign Relations, and I give names. And the book has three parts. At the end of the book, there is the appendix one that is a long list that is I call a chronology of betrayal to the American people. And I mentioned since Woodrow Wilson's times to this moment how these people have been betraying the American people. And I give the names of all the people behind this, the names of the people. Then, and also there is in my website, there is a DVD that I produced with a company in San Leandro, California, the Exalt Media Group, that I host this DVD. And the title of the DVD is Treason in America, the Council on Foreign Relations. And it's very important, the book and this DVD, to understand this organization. Now the second appendix of my book is about it's very interesting. It's an analysis of the September 11 events from the point of view of intelligence and espionage. This is a unique thing. This is I'm breaking new grounds in that, because, you know, there are some people, these engineers and architects for the investigation of the 9/11 events, and there is some things from the point of view of politics or technology engineering, but this is unique. It's an analysis of the September 11 events from the point of view of intelligence and espionage, where I show how any intelligence organization in the world have to reach the conclusion that the explanation given to the American people about the September 11 events cannot be true. And this is the conclusion that most likely reach the Russians, the Chinese, and everybody that every country that has an intelligence agency inform their government, well, this is a hoax. This cannot be true. And
there was plenty
again,
of foreknowledge
my
plenty of foreknowledge as well. There was an Israeli shipping company with ties to Mossad as well who moved out of the towers a week before 9/11. And they broke their lease. You know, oh, something must have made them really, really jump skippy about getting out of those two burning towers.
Yeah, yeah. And I told you that that castle...
You tell me what?
...played the role Agent Provocateur because he did this in Colombia. And then 6 months before the 9/11, he began inviting Muslim leaders to Havana. And 3 months before the 9/11 events, he took a tour where he visited about six Muslim countries. And he had interviews with the leaders. And then he was telling exactly, this is his word, the imperialist king is on its knees. This is the time to hit him. This is the time for victories. So he was looking for patsies, inciting people to attack the United States. And this has been his role. He has been working for these people all the time. And this explains why he has been for 50 years just 90 miles from American shores, unmolested. By the way, the Bay of Pigs, the invasion, was a total success. It was planned to fail and to consolidate Castro in power in Cuba, and it reached its goal. So it was a total success.
Well, that means that the Bay of Pigs was a setup, and in intelligence circles, the person who sets up the operation is either the person who ordered it or the person who planned it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. So this is a basically my research, my training is actually in history. I have degrees in history from the University of Havana, but I realized that to analyze recent historical events, where there is a lot of intelligence and espionage involved, the methodological and analysis tools of the historian don't work. And then I began 20 years ago reading and studying intelligence and espionage, and I became sort of myself an intelligence analyst, and I'm using a research and analysis technology that I call historical tradecraft. Tradecraft in intelligence and espionage is like the modus operandi of the intelligence agencies. So my point of view is totally different. It's totally different. And then when you apply this methodology, things take a totally different vision. You see things from a totally different perspective.
In a nutshell, you assume that everything is an intelligence operation, and inevitably it actually is.
Every
major event, everything that happens is some kind of intelligence operation, you know, uprisings, assassinations, environmental crises, a terrorism attack.
And by the way, somebody wrote a very interesting article. What's his name? I think I have here and Han that appear in.
We'll get into this this one very, very quickly. We've got about a minute before we have to go to break.
But the possibility that Obama is a creation of the CIA.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I absolutely believe it. I mean, I don't think for a moment that intelligence agencies have said no. Buying off politicians and high up politicians is just a no-no. We're going to keep our hands off those. Of course not. The CIA and the intelligence agencies are the ones that really rule the countries, who set the policy, who ensure what frickin' rules are enforced upon itself or not. They're above the law. They control the game, and you better believe that they play to win because they don't have any rules, okay? That's the best way to win a game, is to cheat because you can't lose. And this is what's happening. The world is being ruled by cheats, liars, murderers, and psychopaths, okay? And if anybody wants to survive what they've got planned for you, you best wake up yourself, wake up other people and spread information as much as you conceivably can, because the lives of yourself and your family and the entire population of the Earth literally depends upon it. My very special guest, Servando Gonzalez, joins us after the break. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment of the Vinny Eastwood Show, American Freedom Radio, and the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. Check out the archives there and all the amazing guests that we've had in the past. But in the present, we have a very, very fabulous guest, Servando Gonzalez. Welcome back. I wanted to get your take on the year 2011, and from your perspective, the intelligence perspective, how exactly is this year going to progress? Because we have a compounding crisis type situation. I want to know what your prediction is for the year ahead that everybody's going to be facing together.
Yeah, let me tell you something, because I told you my book is mostly about the CIA. Actually, the CIA, the CIA has two different branches. One is intelligence, and the other one is special operations. The conspirators, the Council of Foreign Relations conspirators, who created the CIA in 1947 with the President Truman signed the National Security Act that created the National Security Council and the CIA, and then the CIA have two branches, one for intelligence, gathering information and producing intelligence, and the other one for secret covert operations. The conspirators in the Council of Foreign Relations, they don't care about intelligence, because the Council of Foreign Relations itself is an intelligence agency to collect and create intelligence for them. That's why the CIA has always had failure after failure in the area of intelligence collection and production. But they have used the CIA capabilities for covert operation, that is to bypass the U.S. government and do their dirty job all around the world and in the United States. I'm totally opposed to intelligence agencies, because they are very powerful tools, and from servants they become masters. I don't think that any country should have a military intelligence. You have the army intelligence, the navy intelligence, even there is a intelligence produced by the State Department. The diplomats are spies, basically. But we don't need intelligence agencies, because once you have an intelligence agency where you authorize some people to go abroad and kill foreign leaders, one day they're going to come inside and kill your own leaders. When you have some people authorized to go abroad and torture people, they began torturing people in your country and the like. So I'm totally opposed to intelligence agency. I think that the world would be much better without intelligence agencies. The Cold War was a hoax, and now the war on terror is a hoax. This is anything. Let me ask you, how can you explain that the United States is fighting a war in Afghanistan against the Al-Qaeda, and now is a new war in Libya supporting Al-Qaeda?
I think I know. Because the CIA are Al-Qaeda.
Al-Qaeda. Let me ask you, do you know that Osama bin Laden is a creation of the CIA? He worked for the CIA. He has always worked for the CIA. But most likely he's dead. But anyway, And who created this thing in Afghanistan? It's Zbigniew Brzezinski. That is a tool of the CFR conspirators.
Then
he got a dialysis in an American hospital a few weeks before the 9/11 attacks. This is all, they are playing with us. This is, people don't see this. This is so obvious that this is all trash. It's a hoax. There is no war against terror or against the. So they are using the people for their own goals. Now, how I see the future? Well, I'm a pessimist. You know, I escaped from Cuba, so I seen the things in Cuba 50 years, and still Castro is there. On the other hand, there are symptoms that the plans, the New World Order guys, their plans are not going according. The things are not going according to their plans. Last year there was one of these urgent meetings of the, I think it was the Bilderberger or one of these organizations in Canada. And Zbigniew Brzezinski told them that things were not going exactly right, that people were awakening. Wow. People are awakening. And that there was dissension among the ranks. So there is still a possibility. We need, you know, what you are doing is, and I'm doing in my way, and most people are doing, is to throw sand into the gears of these people. We need to make their life a little more difficult than it has been until now. And this war in the people's mind. But they are working hard. They are working hard to kill us. This is the two goals of the New World Order conspirator is first depopulation, killing 85% of the people in this planet, and second deindustrialization, so destroying industrial civilization and bringing us to pre-industrial levels of consumption. That is a medieval level of consumption.
Welcome to the fabulous carbon tax future. Servando Gonzalez. We're out of time, unfortunately. I'd like to thank you so much, Servando, for coming on my show here today, donating some of your valuable time. I hope you've had fun. I certainly have. And we'll get some archives out to you so you can post on your website, mate. Thanks so much.
So, Vinny, thanks to you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. There he goes, Servando Gonzalez. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll catch you again some other time.
Sure. Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.